During this Lenten season, the preacher each Sunday has been asked to share what he or she believes. I would say that my belief has gradually changed over the years, perhaps similar to some of you. I grew up in a very, very conservative church where there was an altar call invitation each and every Sunday. Anybody know what an altar call is? Yes, we have a few. I see those hands. We would sing what was called an invitation hymn or one of salvation. Such titles included these: Is My Name Written There? Jesus Saves? Nothing But the Blood? Redeemed? Ye Must Be Born Again? And Have You Any Room for Jesus? Did you get those common themes? Guilt, fear, and judgment. During this final hymn in worship, the congregation would be invited to come forward at an altar rail to pray and either become a Christian or renew a closer walk with God. And our church believed if you did it publicly, you really meant it. You also showed you were committed to God and to the church. Underneath it all was the idea that suffering existed because God was trying to give us a message. Bad things happened to teach us a lesson. And it would continue until we truly confessed our sin. Sounds like a lot of fun, right? At one point in my childhood, I walked up to the altar practically every week. Finally, and some of you have heard this story, finally my dad pulled me aside one Sunday and said, "Pam, you don't have to go to the altar again. You are forgiven. God loves you just as you are. So listen to God, have faith, and you'll know what to do next. But stop going up to the altar." And so I did. Later, when I became an adult, I found that same message from my dad echoed and deepened when I moved to the United Church of Christ. My eyes opened to the possibilities, very wide, of a different kind of God than I was taught in church as a child. What was true as a child is that the world and my world would be made right if only I had enough faith. There was no room for complaint because we deserved whatever happened. What defines my faith, my belief today is very different. I believe today that I can be real with God, that I can be totally honest about where I am in my spiritual walk. I can question things. I can challenge what's fair or unfair. And sometimes I may ask God, how long? How long will our country see children and teenagers killed? How long will our world be at war? How long will we treat each other unfairly? How long will families go without food or shelter? Or perhaps you may raise some troubling questions of your own today. How long must I endure? How long will I be treated this way? How long will my loved ones suffer? Psalm 13 that Dory read is just one of the liturgical songs of the Israelites, known as a psalm of lament. It was written in a time of exile and persecution when the poet was trying to give voice to the pain of the people, the injustices around them. This psalmist's voice is much like our own. How long, O Lord? A woman wrote recently in a publication about her late husband, who taught in his seminary for over 35 years. The seminary established a scholarship in this couple's name, and they dedicated a room in his honor. On the day of the dedication, several former students spoke of this man and the different ways he had been present in their lives. The woman said this: "Many themes evolved, but the most consistent description was how my husband walked with colleagues, students, and friends in times of darkness, depression, doubt, and confusion. I know that my husband, like so many of us, was able to walk with them during times of darkness because he walked there himself." Sometimes we, like the psalmist, can say the same words. How long will you forget me, Lord? Forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long will I be left to my own wits, agony filling my heart daily? Look at me, Lord. Answer me. Lord, my God, because we've walked there ourselves. In our epistle letter from Romans, Paul refers to Abraham and the promise that he would inherit the world, that we all come from Abraham, Christians, Muslims, and Jews. For Judaism, Abraham is literally the father of the nation. For Islam, Prophet Abraham is granted a revelation from the one true God, which he simply accepts and obeys. For Christianity, it is this chapter from Romans that explains the sense in which Christians are children of Abraham. Christians find in Abraham the person who had faith in the promise of God. Verse 16, "For this reason it depends on faith, in order that promise may rest on grace and be guaranteed to all the descendants. For he is the father of us all, in the presence of the God in whom he believed, who gives life to the dead and calls into existence the things that do not exist." What about Abraham? It says that hoping against hope, he believed. Even when, quote, he considered his body too old to be a father, which was already as good as dead, to become that father and for Sarah to have a child at such an old age. God did the miracle anyway. Did Abraham waver? Yes. But he never totally gave up. He grew strong in his faith, being fully convinced that God could do it. So for me, my own faith, today I trust and believe that God is leading me and pushing me and listening to me. And then every once in a while, I cry out the opposite, like the psalmist, "How long, O God, you're not helping me? I don't feel this trust and faith thing. Answer me now." And we wait and wait. Eventually, we know what to do, or life changes and we move to a place of this living faith. Perhaps then we can say, "But I trusted in your steadfast love." I'd like to close with this story. On February 14th, Ash Wednesday, here at this church, I saw several children come through my line, ready to receive their mark. And the words took on a different meaning for me when I saw a child. "Remember, you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Remember, you come from the earth, and you shall return to the earth. You belong to God." That same evening, a pastor from North Carolina finished the same service. And after worship, he wrote these words in his blog. And then I got the full news of the shooting in Parkland, Florida, on my phone while leaving the sanctuary and scrolling with my dusty thumb. I was a Florida guy most of my life, so I have countless friends, college friends, other pastors who are connected to the families from Parkland. And it somehow brings this closer. At one level, I am from Parkland. We all are. Because this is the world. It's not some scary place beyond our reach. It's not some place that imposes something on my children. It's the place I live. It's within my control. It's a place that I am co-creating. God created a garden, but we have created the world as it is. So this is the world as we have made it. I still remember repeatedly going to the altar as a child, whatever turmoil I was experiencing, hoping it would magically disappear. For us as adults, we often pray, hoping for a magical God who will make all our troubles and struggles and the pains of this world disappear. Instead, we wait. This Lent, we wait. How long, O God?